You're now tuned in to The Investor Show, where we teach simple wealth creation for the common investors with investment advisor, award-winning author, international speaker, and founder of Royal Financial Investment Group, Prince Dykes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Prince of Investing Show. I'm your host, Prince Dykes, coming all the way live from the beautiful state of Denver, Colorado. First of all, I want to say thank you, guys and girls, for tuning in today. This is my first ever show here in Denver, Colorado. You're going to be able to catch me every Wednesday at 6:30 here locally in Denver, and also on all of the social media, you know, the Investor Show, the podcast, however you may catch this. Thank you, guys, for tuning in. But as always, I don't have a lot of time, and I definitely know you guys and girls don't have a lot of time, so we're going to jump straight into it.
What up, what up? It's your boy Vigo Saatchi. This is The Investor Show, and you're checking in with the investor genius, Prince Dykes. Let's get it.
So the thing about it, I'm going to go through five topics. We're going to go through five stocks or five things I look for to avoid when I look to invest into a particular company. And this came from a book that I'm going to reference by a guy by the name of Peter Lynch. Hopefully I'm not butchering his name. It's called One Up on Wall Street. I recently read this book. I was flying back from San Diego, California, and I was flying to Denver, Colorado, back here to Denver, and I read his book, and I liked a lot of the philosophies that he had. I took a great liking to him. So we're going to go through each and every one of them. We're going to break down each and every one of the particular things that he had, stocks that he avoid, that he doesn't buy. Now, the thing about this is, it's so important that you need to know this, because we all know what we want to buy, but what we want to buy sometimes is not the best thing to buy. So anyway, we're going to jump straight into it. We're going to get into number one. The number one thing that he avoids is the hottest stock in an industry. So for a prime example, let's say you take an Amazon, right? Amazon is like the hottest stock right now on the internet here in 2018, where we're at in June right now. So by being so hot, you see it grow so fast. It shoot up very fast. The thing about that is, if you watch one of my old interviews, you've seen an interview with a guy by the name of David Siminoff. And one of the things that he said out of Silicon Valley, he's someone that invested into his company, American Funds, which is a $1 trillion fund right now. They invested into Netflix, Facebook, the internet before it became the internet. And one of the things that he said that was very pivotal in his interview, he said, you know, when the all we know is that when a company becomes the biggest company on the market, it only has one way to go. When you're at the top of the mountain, you only have one place to go, which is down. He used Yahoo, for example. He said, I remember when Yahoo came out and it very first started, it was this brand new company, and it grew up. And as it grew, now you look at it, Yahoo is still here today, but it's not as prominent as it was like a decade or two ago. So the thing about it is, when you're the hottest thing or you're the hottest stock in the industry, you only have one place to go. So the thing about it is, if you are into the hottest stock in a particular industry, you have to be very good at selling, knowing when to sell. Now we're going to go back. His book is a little dated. It was a little old. Disk drives. Remember disk drives? Remember you just put it into a computer, the little floppy disk. Some of them used to be a little floppy. Then it came like a little hard card, and it was like the new advanced thing. You put them in there, put your homework on them, take them to another computer. That was a big thing. That was at that time, I was nowhere near investing at that time. But at that time, that industry, that product was due to grow 50% every single year. 50% every single year. Now the thing about that is, as we know, when you have it's one of the laws, when you have a low barrier entry into business, and meaning that low barrier entry and high profits. High profits, when someone is making a lot of money doing something, and it's maybe not that hard to do, one of the big things you have to worry about is competition. Now everybody wants a piece of the action. Now everybody wants to jump into it. And what happened with the floppy disk industry, everybody ran to it. Everybody was making floppy disks, and, you know, the profit was pretty much taken away. So that was one of the things you got to think about. Just because it is a hot thing and it's becoming hot right now, or it's a new hot thing, how can I miss with this? You have to be weary and understand that, hey, just because it's a hot thing now, it's going to draw a lot of people into doing what it's doing. A lot of people are going to try to mimic it. And usually, when one company makes a profit, it's taking someone else's profits. For a prime example, if I opened up a Burger King today, and I opened up that Burger King today, and people start coming to my store, that means someone is not going to Wendy's or another company. Great for me, right? But not so much for Wendy's, who's trying to grow. So when you have all this competition comes in, sometimes it, what's the word I'm looking for, convolute the market in a way. And we're going to give you a scenario of an industry where it's called negative growth industries. Negative growth industries, something that sparked my mind. Something like cigarettes is what he used inside of the book. Smoking cigarettes. It's not an industry that's really going to expect it to expand and grow. It's just kind of just there, you know. And I think Philip Morris, if I'm not mistaken, that is the number one cigarette brand. That's the cigarette brand that he used. It's not really, you know, it's kind of found its niche. Not too many people run into it. Not too many competition there. So it's a negative growth industry. But guess what? You can bet your bottom dollar it is making money. Now, granted, people are vaping now. People are using nicotine packs, things like that. But people are still smoking. So that's a negative growth industry versus the brand new hot thing that comes onto the market. So that is the reason why when something goes up, when something has a shoots up like a rocket up, you have to worry about the downside. And usually that downside is not too far around the corner. Because right now we're looking at Amazon. 10 or 15 years from now, will we still be talking about Amazon? It's the same thing that we said when we spoke about Blockbuster. 20 years ago, Blockbuster, that was the thing to do. Who wasn't going to Blockbuster, at least movie gallery, or using some type of rental movie situation? But now you look at it today and you see how it's drastically have changed, where that's nonsense now. Something called Netflix came along. Technology. Now, I don't want to beat that dead horse, so we're going to go into the next thing, right? So I want to hit on something before I roll into the next thing. Philip Morris, a company that's in a negative growth industry. If you're in a negative growth industry, how do you make money? You make money in a negative growth industry because, one, every year, due to technology, people learn how to make cigarettes for cheaper. You may use cheaper product. You find ways to cut costs. Another thing you can do with cigarettes, guess what? We're living in this world where inflation, the price of everything is going up. So you charge a little bit more for the cigarettes. That's how companies increase their profits, by raising, we're going to get more into it, but you can raise prices. If you're in a negative growth industry, you can raise prices, or you can find ways to cut costs. That's how you can keep your profits. The second thing is, we always hear it, the next big thing. Number two, the next big thing. Hey, look, this is going to be like the next Facebook. Hey, look, this is going to be the next Apple. Hey, look, this is going to be the next whatever the case may be. And the thing about it is, I like to sit back. If you watch this show long enough, this is my first time in Denver, but I have, you know, been on, you know, different places now for 5 years. I've always loved to bring in the veterans, the seasoned guys, the guys with a little gray hair in their head, because they're the ones that call me or they text me and they say, hey, Prince, come on, we've seen this before. This happened in the 70s. This happened in the 80s. This happened in the 90s. This happened in 2000, way before you was even thinking about investing. And that's why I like those seasoned guys. And the thing about it is, when, you know, I'm at the age of 33 now, and yes, I've read a lot and I've been, you know, experienced a lot, but it's a lot I don't know. It's a lot that I haven't experienced. And for a prime example, I may come out and say, whoa, this is the next hot thing. And people are like, you know, they already tried that in the 70s and the 80s. They already done that. And the thing about Mr. Peter Lynch was saying that I thought was, you know, he was speaking back from the 60s. He said, every time something is dubbed as the next big thing, it never becomes that thing. As soon as it is dubbed the next big thing, it meets its demise. So when someone says, hey, look, man, you need to get into this, man. This is like new Facebook is going to take over the world. It's great. Usually that's when it starts to decline. Something that we can see right now that's very relevant to today. We look at our cryptocurrencies. The number one cryptocurrency right now that I know of, now I'm not a crypto guy, But the one that everyone chases in the first one was Bitcoin, right? And Bitcoin in December, it hit its all-time peak about 19, 20,000. We fast forward today, we're talking about, today in June, it's at around 6,000. That's a massive drop-off of an asset class. Now, granted, cryptocurrencies are very volatile. At the end of the year, it can just shoot up to $100,000. Who knows? But the thing about it, at that time, I remember how the market was at September, December timeframe of 2017. All this euphoria was running. Everybody was like, hey, you couldn't even buy a hamburger without people telling you to buy Bitcoin. Everybody was so excited. Everybody was talking about the profits that everybody had made and how much of a genius they was and all this other great stuff. But now it's very quiet. What happened, right? Because this is supposed to be the next big thing. This thing is going to take over the world. It's unhackable. It's untraceable. It's blah, 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 blah. Now, I'm a fan of blockchain. I like the blockchain, the technology behind it. But I never was a fan of cryptocurrencies itself. I watched it, but I never was a fan. And some people said, oh, you hate cryptocurrencies. No, it's not that I don't hate it. I'm just not smart enough to pick a cryptocurrency. There's thousands of them out there. Tons of them are being birthed every day. I've had tons of cryptocurrency companies with different coins that are doing ICOs that have written me and said, hey, I'm bringing this new ICO, and can you help me launch it and XYZ? So these things are literally being birthed out of nowhere every single day. How can I pick the right one? So with me, I chose the market, which is tried and true, over the new hot thing, because it's something that one of the people I look up to, Warren Buffett, said. He said, it's not about how much money you make. It's about how much money you don't lose. It's about how much money you keep. So that was one of the things that I took a very big liking to. The next thing was, the next thing is whisper stocks. You know, the people who whisper to you and say, this company, they just came up with a great idea to cure cancer. And this company is going to cure cancer, and Wall Street doesn't know about it. Nobody knows about it. But, all this other great stuff like that. So you like, whoa, I haven't heard about it. So you start to look into it. And the thing about it is, when that little whisper goes around, it has an initial jump. But in the long run, they usually never pan out, right? They never become the thing that you expected. But on the whisper on the ground, hey, you can get a one-up or whatever the case may be. They never become long-term. They're very emotional tied. Man, you think about it. The cure for cancer, that's a big thing. So that's another one. So I stay away from whisper stocks. Number four, and it's something that I've seen in business with myself. Number four in business, any company that relies 25% or more on one particular customer, stay away from. Now, Prince, what does that have to do with anything? Because if they lost that one customer, if I haven't learned anything so far in business, I learned that there's no such thing as friends forever. There's no such thing as enemies forever. And everybody will cut a corner and people will think about things differently, right? So the idea is that if a company relies on having, let's take me for example. I have a slaughterhouse. I kill cows and I sell the ground beef to McDonald's. Great. Great on you. You're selling beef to McDonald's. But what happens if I lost a contract with McDonald's? What happens to that particular company? Now you have to ask yourself, if a company relies 25% of its profits on one particular customer or one particular company, what happens to that company? So now I'm more cognizant of that, because what happens? We all know the only thing that's guaranteed in life is change. One day someone is your friend, next day they're not your friend, next day whatever the case may be. So if I am a particular company that's relying on someone, more than 25-35%, people are like, oh, look at this small company. I see it happen all the time. You have this little penny stock company that starts selling its batteries to Apple, and everybody's like, whoa, this company makes the strings behind Apple. This is great. They just got a contract. That's great, but what other contracts does it have? If Apple is the only company, and if something happened with Apple, that they cut their contract, or Apple was the, whatever the case may be, something happened to Apple, what is going to happen to that smaller company? Nobody knows, right? So I always look for a company that has a diversified portfolio of customers, of people to sell to. Another one, number five, a classic that a lot of people look over. The P.E. ratio. What is the P.E. ratio? A lot of people don't even know what the P.E. ratio is. The P.E. ratio itself is the price to earnings ratio. The price of the stock or the asset class versus the earnings. Now, when I compare a P.E. ratio, I don't compare Ford to Google. They're in two totally different worlds, right? I like to compare Google to its counterparts. I like to compare an Apple to a Microsoft. I won't do an Apple to a Ford. I do a Ford and a GM because they're still in that same arena. Because some industries or some sectors have very high P.E. ratios. But the thing that Mr. Lynch hit on in his book that I thought was pretty interesting, formula that he had, he said, hey, whatever the P.E. ratio is, that is the time it's going to take to double your money. So if you look at the P.E. ratio of a company and it's 40, it's going to take 40 years to double your money. Versus if you look at a company that has a P.E. ratio of 2, it's going to take 2 years before it doubles its money. That is the thing that was very pivotal that he said. But the thing about it is, companies that have a high P.E. ratio, like right now, Amazon P.E. ratio is through the roof, right? Companies that have a high P.E. ratio are usually your fast-growing stocks that are going up, 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 up. Because why would someone buy a P.E. ratio at 40? People buy, most of the companies that have a high P.E. ratio, they're like Amazon. You know, look how much Amazon has done, how much it has grown over the years. So people take a liking to Amazon faster because they're looking at the growth. Companies that have a very low P.E. ratio, like a Ford, usually these big, mature, blue-chip stocks, they have a very low P.E. ratio, but a lot of them pay a high dividend. Like right now, Ford pays about 4 or 5% in dividends. By paying 4 or 5% in dividends, it attracts investors. So the thing about it is, in his book, he was saying, stay away from companies that have high P.E. ratios. Because look how long it takes for a company to double its money or whatever. So the P.E. ratio is the price of the stock versus the earnings. Because when people look at stocks, they talk about the news. They talk about the news itself. They talk about what my buddy told me. I heard they signed a deal with Under Armour. I heard that nobody even pulls out the earnings. For prime example, if I was to ask you to borrow money, and you know I didn't have a job, I didn't have a source of income, would you loan me that money? Probably not. And the reason you're probably not going to loan me that money because you feel as though I'm not going to pay you back, right? Because you're going to say, well, this guy doesn't make money. How he's going to be able to pay me back? But in the investing world, it's companies on the stock market that don't even make money. They haven't made money for years. But a lot of people don't even look at the earnings. Don't even say, hey, well, does this company even make a profit? Does it even bring in money? Because that is one of the key factors of a company being able to survive. It's earnings, it's profits, simple, basic business. But I'm going to get into the five ways a company can make money. There's only five ways. I got all five of them. So the first thing you can do, reduce costs. For prime example, let's say myself, I'm an author, right? I'm a published author of two books. And let's say if my book costs me $10 to make and I sell it for $15, that means I make a $5 profit, right? But the question is, if I can turn around and find a way to, instead of my books costing me $10 to make, I can make them for $8, now my profit has increased to $8, right? Because now I'm selling the same amount, but I have increased my earnings. I have increased my profit just by cutting the cost. That's one way companies can increase their profits. Even somebody like Philip Morris, like Clorox Bleach, Who thinks about investing in chloride bleach or pantyhose or leggings? Those are things that are selling like crazy, but they're not really growing. Like, you know, think about trash piles and things like that. They make money, but then a negative growth industry, but there's some ways that they can make money. I don't want to ramble off into that. I want to keep it going. Number two, simple way, raise prices. I'm selling, my book costs $10 to make. I sell it for $15. I need to make more money. It doesn't cost $15 anymore. Now it costs $17, $16, right? You raise the price, and if you sell the most, but you got to think about it. When price goes up, what happens to demand? Demand could go down. People are like, whoa, the price went up. They may not be willing to pay the new price. So sometimes by raising the price, you can trigger the demand to go down, which will work against you. So that's one of the things. Raising prices. Reducing costs. Another thing, cutting losses, bad investments. For prime example, I'm spending so much money on Facebook ads, and I'm not really seeing anything come back. I'm spending so much money on PR. I'm spending so much money on a lawyer. I'm spending so much money on a manager, whatever the case may be. And you say, hey, well, you know what? This is really not working like I thought it would work. I'm spending so much money on making this cartoon, right? I'm putting out money left and right over this cartoon. This cartoon is really not taking off. The Wesley Learns cartoon is really not taking off. So what's one of the things I can do? I can cut that. I can cut losers. By cutting those losses, now that money that I was spending on the cartoon, I can now focus it on things that are making money. And in essence, that's the way the company makes money. By cutting losses, by cutting things that's not producing. Maybe it may be the workforce. Maybe it may be the labor. Things they have to reduce. So that's number three. Number four, expand into new markets. I'm here in Denver. I want to grow past Denver. How do I grow past Denver? I have to expand into new markets. Maybe I can get into LA. Maybe I can get into New York. Maybe I can get into Atlanta. Those are the things you must do. A company to make more money. Hey, I do this here in Denver, but I want to expand myself. So in order to expand myself, I take myself out to a new place, like, to a new market, expanding into new markets. Number five, concentrating on your market that you do have, selling more in your current market. Sell more in your current market. For prime example, hey, I'm here in Denver, and I make, I sell these bottles of water, and I sell 100 of them a day. Maybe I can sell even more in my particular market. Maybe with marketing, maybe advertising or something like that. So that's one of the ways you can look into expanding it, concentrating to your particular market to make more. Now, I just hit the top five. So I'm going to do a rundown real quick over the five stocks characteristics that I look to avoid. Number one was what? The hottest stock in your industry. The hottest stock in the industry, when you're at the top, you only have one way to go, right? So the hottest stock in the industry, everybody's jumping into it, even though it's going to look beautiful when you look at it on the chart. You're going to go look at the chart and say, oh, if I would have got in right here, I could have got in here, all the other great stuff. But that's the thing about it. The hottest stock in the market, the hottest stock in the industry, no. I personally stay away from. Number two, and then also when you're making that much money into one market, you bring in competitors. Now, you as this big, great company, which is cool, but now everybody's mocking what you're doing. They're eating away at this company's profits, just like we just hit off in the story of the disc, right? Number two, this is the next big thing. This is going to take over the world. This is the next Facebook. This is the next Apple. This is the next whatever the case may be. This is the next McDonald's. The next big things usually never become the next big thing. They're usually blown up off of air. People are not even looking at the fundamentals. They don't even look at the earnings. They're just going off of how it's going up. They're watching commercials. They're watching the media. They're driving down the road. Oh, wow, they just opened up over here. They just opened up over here. I want to get into this company, right? So that was the thing I think get away from. Number three, whisper stocks. Hey, you know they got a cure for cancer. You see it all the time in the pharmaceutical industry. The stock is just going like this. All of a sudden, it just shoots up to the roof. And the thing about it is they come up with some new, hey, it's a cure for cancer. This company is working on a cure for XYZ. But in the long term, those stocks historically don't pan out, right? Number four, 25% of the profits go to one customer. What I mean by that is, hey, I make this bottle of water, and I sell this bottle of water to the Denver Public Schools. The Denver Public Schools is my biggest customer and is my only customer. What happens if that connection dies off or cuts off? Now you have what? Whatever the case may be, bad. Now that company could suffer big time if they lost that one customer. So look at who are the suppliers. Who are they supplying? Who are their customers? And if one of their customers is just one big company, be very weary. So 25% or less, no more than 25% of a particular company going to one particular customer. Number five, the PE ratio. Don't buy companies with high PE ratio. Have I done it before? Yes, unwillingly. Because usually you're looking at the fast companies that are growing real fast. And, you know, uses Amazon, uses your Facebooks, your Google. They may have carry a high PE ratio. But you look over that because you're looking at the growth, right? But those are things that now I'm more weary of, the PE ratio, to say, hey, well, that's great. That company may grow, but it may be some better options out there. So that's another thing. So the hottest stock in the industry, one. Two, the next big anything. Three, whisper stocks. Four, 25% or more going to one particular customer. Five, the PE ratio. And now we're going to hit the five ways a company can make money. It's only five ways. One, reduce costs. Two, raise the price. Three, cut the losses of losers. Four, expand into new markets. Five, sell more in your current market. So, I hope you guys got something out of that today. I definitely had fun. This is my first show here in Denver, Colorado. Definitely stay tuned for more. My name is Prince Dykes. This is the Prince of Investing. And like always, don't forget to hit the like, subscribe, comment, and share button. And to the next video, podcast, cartoon, book, or whatever you see me do crazy around the globe, peace, be safe, I'm out, and thank you.